Hello and welcome to the My Home is on the Road show. This is the show that brings you stories and music from the road, and this week we definitely have some of both. This week the show is coming to you from the Amtrak Superliner train somewhere outside of Provo, Utah. And this week we're going to bring you part two of an interview I did with Michael Mahaney, a fantastic piano player and teacher that lives down in Prescott, Arizona. And I got to sit down with him recently in his living room, which is a beautiful, beautiful living room there in Prescott Valley, just outside of Prescott, Arizona, overlooking the chaparral, the sagebrush desert, looking out at Mingus Mountain. And in his living room, he's got not one but two grand pianos, full-size grand pianos. One of them is for sale if you want to get in touch with him. And if you listen to part one, you've got to get a little bit of Mike's sense of humor. He's a guy that I admire because he's very optimistic and always has a ready laugh. He's got a he's kind of a tall guy with a nice shock of gray hair up on top. And as I mentioned, we sat down in the living room at the piano together to talk about piano and where he got started, where he's going. He's got a CD coming out quite soon, so you might want to look for that on his website, which is MahaneyPianoArts.com. So here we go, talking about what it's like to be a piano teacher.
My fear, if I was going to teach piano, would just be that, it would just be so repetitive. Like, oh, this is like the 10th time this week I've, showed them how to do, I'd rather do stuff that's pushing me instead of just doing the same thing over and over and over again.
That's it. That's interesting, but it's like refinement, by fire. The more I do it, the better I can do it, and it becomes more fascinating for me, and of course for the student. I mean, they don't know, because they don't know how I did it before this lesson, this current right now lesson. But it's something that just keeps, I get more and more fascinated by it. I don't get more bored by it. My favorite lesson of all the lessons I give, and there's probably like 1,000, maybe 2,000. There's actually no number. Okay. But the most interesting of all for me, two black keys, C. Two black keys, C. Can you say two black keys, C?
Can I say it?
Yeah.
I think I can say two black keys, C.
That's the first lesson. I had a student this week.
Oh, so you're teaching where C is.
I teach them the names of the keys.
Yeah.
And it's...
Are those really called two black keys?
Yeah, there's two black keys.
That's not racist, is it?
No.
Okay.
We should make a song out of that, But what I'm saying is just, this is the most basic lesson of all, but it's not that the two black keys in the C is what's so interesting, is that the person that I'm with is so infinitely fascinating. The person, their personality, finding out how they think, finding out how to inspire them, how to equip them. This is endless. This is like, you looking at a map of the world and thinking of the places you want to travel to. That's what... Right. That's maybe what turns you on, one of the things. For me, just working with a unique person and doing that same old thing, it's not the same old. Because the way I will convey it to this person, I'll do it in a way I've never done it before. See, I don't give lessons, I teach. I don't spit out the same information over and over again. I don't really have a method. I have methods, but I don't have a method. So that's what keeps it, the boundaries keep going out in all directions. Wow. Even though it may not seem like it, but for me, it's just like, okay, here we go with this. How do you name all the keys? Okay, how do I do that with this person in 30 minutes so that they nail it? What's the best way to reach them? So I start to explore their mind, how they think, how they reason, how they put things together, what makes them laugh. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And the kid that was doing the Two Black Keys CDE a couple days ago, he's a boy, okay? So my first thought was, let's get him away from the keyboard. So the first thing I did was I moved the benches back so he could stand and go, Two Black Keys C, Two Black Keys C, Two Black Keys C, so he could walk to the right and left. Mm-hmm. And right away I noticed he was a lot happier when he was physically moving around. You know what I'm saying? Because boys often, they want to do it physically. Then I had him start running around the room or walking really fast, reciting Two Black Keys CDE. It's just that he was physically walking and then saying the information, and then I started walking behind him and I started walking faster than him until I overtook him. And I actually like bumped into him and he almost fell, and he thought that was the funniest thing. You see what I'm getting at? So for a boy his age to turn that, you know, into something that's more athletic, physical, well, he'll never forget that as long as he lives. He'll probably never forget that lesson. Wow. See what I mean?
That's so a lot better than the ruler on the wrist.
Yeah.
Ouch. Right. Wait, you want to play Summertime? You want to swap?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That'd be great.
We did that the other night, and that was cool. Such a long piano, so like that, you know, these the bottom notes are relevant. Not like a lot of uprights, so they're just mud.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all the way down to the bottom. Yeah. All the way to the top too.
Piano's got a nice bottom.
It's got a nice butt.
So well, you mentioned performing. What, and you've got all kinds of stuff that you've just recorded.
Yeah, I've recorded several
But how did you get songs. In? How did you make the transition from, you know, learning to play the piano, learning to teach the piano, to making up your own music?
You know, Dave, it that's a good question, because it actually all started there. That's where it started. The first memories I have of the piano is just sitting at the piano and experimenting with sounds.
This is
this is like before I knew like, you know, a C major, C7, before I knew any names of things, I would just sit down and play like this note, which I don't know the name of it, you know, sounds good with this note for some unknown reason. I don't know why, you know. And then, so actually it all started there. So really I've come full circle.
Oh, right on.
Full circle, yeah. Can I play something for you that I wrote when I was in third grade?
Yes. I love that.
Yeah.
Actually, I can't remember what I wrote in third grade.
I remember.
I made up little things.
I remember this, and it's a very cool song, because I had quite a passion for dinosaurs at that time.
Is this a song called Brontosaurus?
No. I think it's about, it's kind of an oblique description of a T-Rex.
Oh, right on.
Yeah. T-Rex. My first ever modulation, ready? There it is. And return home, recapitulation.
T-Rex walking down the street.
Yeah, kind of T-Rex walking. T-Rex walking by, and you know his little arm.
His little arm. Yeah.
And he waved.
Ding. I heard that somewhere.
And so from in the house, I went, "Yo, T-Rex."
You know, it's too bad this is radio there. This was really, really funny. Imitating a T-Rex, a little arm. Well, that's how you could play the piece. You know, you could just play the piece.
I really think the anatomy of the piece. The left hand's the legs. Watch. Left, right, left, right, left, right, left, right. Okay, that's the legs.
Well, yeah.
And then these
the big fat legs.
Yeah, the big fat legs. Fat.
Muscular.
Muscular. Okay, and then we have the right hand would be the arms, because you know they can't do anything, no, so they're just stuck in the same place.
All he wants to do is scratch himself, but
he can't reach. So that was the very first song. So you know, how did I make the transition? I kind of never did. I always had one toe in the waters of, you know, experimentation. I mean, when I would study Chopin, you know, I would always be thinking, interesting. Like, what is he doing here? Oh, so that, you know, I always study composers as a arranger, composer. Like, let's check out what these other cats are up to, and then maybe see what I can use. You know, back in my shop.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, for sure. You know, like Beethoven.
You know, that just the raw emotion of Beethoven. I mean, the way he can just express, you know, rage. You know what I'm saying? And then resolution.
Yeah, well,
I will kill him.
But take us through that, and because that was like a huge chord, that first one you hit. Like, yeah. What's the name of that chord?
That chord is a C minor.
Well, okay, I feel kind of silly now.
No, that's all right. Well, you know, you got major, and then if you lower the third.
It looked a lot more complicated.
Well, it's because Beethoven did something other composers didn't do. He puts the third in the bass. This is a secret for our listening audience. Okay, what Beethoven does, this note right here, most composers won't put that there. Watch, they'll do this. Now watch Beethoven. It's So he's got more guts in his big chords. He wasn't afraid to push everything in there. You know what I mean? He wouldn't like try to edit. He would edit, but he was more bold with just, you know, layering fire in the bass. You know, just putting the big sound down there. I want to kill him. I will kill him. I will kill him.
Is that really what that song's about? Right. But it's a lot more interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially with the accent.
Yeah.
The Phil.
I will kill him. Probably his landlord. You know, rent was probably due.
Yeah.
You know
what I mean? Tell me about a different. Now you mentioned Chopin. Now, how would if Chopin was gonna kill his landlord, what would it sound like?
Well, Chopin was like Rembrandt, like writing piano music. Okay, so try that again. I mean, the left hand is like constant shifting. Emotion, you know, just like a day in the life of a person, you know, a human being, you know, you wake up, you know, and then whatever, your emotions change a little and then change again, change your moods, you know, minute by minute, hour by hour, because the melody he writes in that is like, listen, I mean, it's like T-Rex goes downtown. Exactly. So the left hand is the shifting moods and
so it's
emotions.
Like T-Rex goes downtown. He's thinking about a lot of things on his way.
On his way. If I could just get longer arms. Maybe I could trade them in for larger ones. I'm so tired of this. It's not fair.
I can see how you open this music up for younger people and for me. Yeah. The studio audience.
Studio audience. Does this guy have a license or?
Yeah, they're going to pass the law just because of you. She didn't used to need to have a license to buy a piano. But then there was the Mahaney incident.
Yeah, the Mahaney incident. But, you know, so I would go to all these composers, I still do, and I sort of. You know, I just sort of figure out what they're up to. What are they thinking? What are they saying? How do they say it? How do they use the piano? How do they voice chords? You know what I mean? This is a C minor, but this is a Beethoven. That's a C minor. You know, but C minor is also a C minor. You know what I mean? This is C minor. This is C minor. Every one of them has its own nuance.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So it's fun to study the masters and just, you know, basically in art the biggest thing is to hang out with someone else. You know, with a great teacher, with a master. And I feel when I study the scores of these deceased masters, it's like spending time with them. I mean, really. You really actually get to know them.
Huh. Yeah, yeah.
And I don't mean that like to sound cool on the radio. You know what I mean? I mean, I really do, though. You really feel like you're talking to them. You actually, if you pay attention to what they say and how they say it, it's sort of a, aha, so that's what he does. So that's how he gets around that little problem in the piece. That's how he, you know, navigated through that. Oh. Or that's how he explained that theme. That's how he developed it. See? So, yeah.
In teaching for... What, 26 years you said?
Yeah, 26.
Fulfilling?
Yeah, completely.
Yeah, one of the things that always strikes me about you and actually and Valerie too is you guys are both just really happy people most of the time that I see you. You know, you're not, don't ever seem too stressed out or anything and you're always, you know, a second away from laughing at something.
Well, you know, it's nice if it's a real blessing if you enjoy teaching, which I do. Some musicians teach because they have to. Mm-hmm. It's all right, you know, but it's sort of like, you know, the difference is between have to and get to. Mm-hmm. It's pretty huge.
Yeah.
So I'm glad. I don't think I've ever really disliked a lesson. It's usually really a lot of fun, and it's two way. You know, the students are teaching me things. There was one kid. I want to mention his name on the air. Is that all right if I mention his name? Yeah, he's a really talented kid. His name is John McMonagle. Mm-hmm. And he sat at that piano mm-hmm. about 15 years ago. And he was basically going like this with his hands in the air. And he was going, I can't really do it that well, but he was smashing the keys down mm-hmm. on the piano. And because Mr. Suter had kind of taught me, you know, you never do that to the piano. You always, you know, like coax the sound out of it or whatever. So I was basically telling John, you can't do that to the piano. You cannot do that. And he looked at me and he goes, I do what I want to the piano. That's the way I feel it. I play the way I feel, okay? I don't do what you say. I do what I feel. So basically, you know, big argument. And he won, you know? So what was good about that was it took a certain, like, maybe rigidity in my view of the piano. Mm-hmm. And it showed me, hey, you know, maybe sometimes you do try to break it. You do try to break the piano. You can't, but it's fun to try. So in other words, he challenged me to stop being, you know, like everything was in a museum and take it outside, you know, and go ahead and try to break the piano, you know. See what kind of sound you can get. And the ironic thing is, in the years after he said that, my playing more and more did that. And tuners have called me Jerry Lee Lewis because... Okay. Because I get pretty rough with pianos when I start playing. I play a lot of strings out of tune while I'm playing.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you're abusing the pianos.
I'm trying to break it. So. Hey, do you want to play something?
Yeah.
Play another.
Yeah.
Duet.
Yeah, we can play a little. What's that one we did?
Hey.
What?
You want to reverse poles?
Oh, okay. Yeah, we can.
Like do like a C blues.
Okay.
Just a C blues.
Let's see what I find. Piece to play that you can play for us that's, you know, one of your, maybe a current favorite?
You know what I was thinking of? I just don't know if I can do it, but if I can, Linus and Lucy, is that...
Yeah, because I never learned how to play that one.
Okay, well, then this can be a lesson.
Good.
No, because it's fun, you know. Thank you.
much different than I've heard it before.
Yeah, it's a great number. It's got the funky bass.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And then the Beethoven right hand. Like German 19th century.
Yeah.
So I've written six pieces that are on a CD, soon to be copyrighted. Just a little, you know, play a little sample?
Yeah, anyway, yeah.
All right, here we go.
That, see now.
Just, you know, give our listeners just a little sample.
Yeah, that was, yeah. I can definitely hear a little Beethoven in that.
Strike. I should write less.
One.
I should write less and less.
Okay.
Let's see here. Let's see. What would it be? Here's one that I stood on the shoulders of J.S. Bach. That's not the title, although it would be a good title. Baby.
Yeah, yeah.
I like that. I stood on the shoulders of J.S. Bach.
There you go.
You should see Bach. Of course, he died, so you know.
Well, yeah,
stand on his grave, maybe.
Yeah, it's kind of creepy there. It's like a zombie flick or something. This is Bach so far. And here comes Mahaney.
Et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, yeah.
So what that is, a Bach prelude that I just took the first four measures of, and then I arranged all the rest of it using Bach's structure, harmony, and then sort of substituting my music, but you know what I mean? In his, like his aquarium, I put my fish in his aquarium, kind of.
Well, yeah, that makes sense. Humorous as that sounds.
All right, and that's where we're going to leave things off with Michael Mahaney. If you want to get in touch with him, his website is mahaneypianoarts.com. So give that a search and you can find him. If you want to get in touch with me, it's davemanning.net. And I want to give a big thank you to Groundswell Media Productions for keeping that up and running. And Nathan, I promise I will mail that check soon. All right, so from the Amtrak Superliner outside of Provo, Utah, this is the My Home is on the Road show. Safe travels, and have yourself a fantastic day.
I can't promise I'll ever bring you back again this week. The road's the only place I'll be at home. Be at home. Well, my home's on the road. The road's the only place I feel home. I don't know if I'm ever gonna get back again this way. The road's the only place I feel home. Feel at home.